Okay, so we're going to talk about Kuge, sky flowers, flowers of emptiness from Shobogenzo. Here's the opening verse. The eminent ancestor said, a single flower opens five petals. The fruit forms and ripens naturally of itself. This is a quote by Bodhidharma upon arriving in India to transmit Buddhism. This is a quote from Bodhidharma upon arriving in China to transmit Buddhism from India. And I believe that Bodhidharma is 4th century. So this is what he said about his kind of mission when he came to China. So the eminent ancestor is Bodhidharma said, a single flower opens five petals, the fruit forms and ripens naturally of itself. Here's Dogen's commentary on this. We should study the occasion as well as the form of the radiance of this flower opening. The petals of the single flower are the five petals, and the five petals opening is the single flower. When the truth of the single flower is penetrated, it is, I originally came to this land to transmit the Dharma and save deluded beings. Our inquiry into the form of the radiance should be the study of this. So that's what I'm going to talk about today. I'll read it again. We should study the occasion as well as the form of the radiance of this flower opening. The petals of the single flower are the five petals, and the five petals opening is the single flower. Where the truth of the single flower is penetrated, it is, I originally came to this land to transmit the Dharma and save deluded beings. Our inquiry into the form of the radiance should be the study of this. Now, some of you might be familiar enough with kind of Zen sayings to have heard this expression before about the flower opening and the five petals being a reference to the five schools of Zen. But that is not what this is about. So if you've heard of that, just don't go there. Okay, Dogen said, we should study the occasion. So what is the occasion? The occasion is the time of something happening, as well as the form of this thing happening. And that form is the being. So we have this time being, again, together, happening simultaneously. Something happens at a certain time, and it happens in a particular form, and that form is the radiance of that occasion and time and being in particularity, or we could say Buddha nature. So the word that Dogen uses for radiance here refers to the aura or nimbus around a Buddha. Dogen talks about radiance as komyo, and that's not the same word that he used here, but komyo as the radiance of your day. So Buddha nature is this essential aspect of everything, all being, this mat here, you, the flower, whatever it might be that you can name, this way in which everything exhibits this essential aspect of being this interpenetrated, interconnected event called reality. And that that event of reality is essentially altruistic. So this is who we are, that's what our true nature is. And if we actually were in touch with that and understood that, what our essential Buddha nature is, it would be transformative. So that's part of our practice, is to understand what exactly does that mean to us in our lives as human beings as we go through our lives. So he says we should study the occasion as well as the form of the radiance of this flower opening. So just studying this flower opening, this particular flower opening, is important. This flower opening is an expression of the activity of the being time of the Dharma position of this flower. So what's a Dharma position? This is really important, understanding about Dharma position. A Dharma position is just something that you can name some time, some occasion, some situation, some person, something is a Dharma position. It has particularity. So, but at the same time, everything within the Dharma position also is all being time. Everything simultaneously is happening in that Dharma position. So Thich Nhat Hanh gives a really good example of this in his text on his book on the Heart Sutra. And here's the example he gives. So if you take this piece of paper, right? This piece of paper is a Dharma position. The Dharma position of this piece of paper. And it's a particular piece of paper, right? Comes out of my computer. It has my notes on the front, on the back, since I used it again. It's got part of a sutra on the back of it. So this is a, this paper has particularity. It's a unique piece of paper that has a unique thing on it that you can recognize. It's a different piece of paper than this piece of paper. It's a different piece of paper than the piece of paper that you have at home, right? Or the piece of paper that you're writing on. So it's a unique piece of paper. And yet, simultaneously, this piece of paper also is all being time. Everything in the universe that has happened is right here in this one point of particularity of paper. The paper is made out of wood, I'm assuming. This wood depended on the sun, depends on earth, the soil, it depends on all of the natural occurrences that makes that tree throughout time and space. It depends on the person or the persons who also made this piece of paper. Those people are also interconnected and interpenetrating this paper, as is all physical events, all spiritual events perhaps. Everything is right here in this piece of paper in this moment. Does that make sense? So this piece of paper completely encompasses the totality of the universe, all being time, and simultaneously it's just this piece of paper. That's all. Just this paper. Shohaku Kimura says 100% this piece of paper. So Dogen's saying it happens within the context. Our awakening, our lives happen within the contents, the particularity of our experience in that moment. And because we say it's 100%, it means that it's not trapped by what came before and what comes after. We are not trapped by our previous experience. If we can fully inhabit this peace, this moment, this Dharma position, in relationship to all the totality of all the Dharma positions that are happening simultaneously, and in particular the ones that are affecting this particular Dharma position, and we can respond skillfully to this Dharma position, it requires that we are not trapped by our preconceived ideas about the nature of our experience, right? If you go into an experience, so when we have a kind of karmic notion or some thoughts about something or some ideas, if you think of it as a circle, so where this is the circle is this moment, this Dharma position. So now we're talking about a Dharma position as a being time, a moment of being time, right? So you're doing whatever you're doing, and at that moment, your response to this particular situation, maybe you're in a meeting or something or talking with someone, your response can be very narrow. Because if you bring all of your preconceived ideas about that situation into that circle, the exit out of that circle will be a very narrow exit. If you go into a meeting and you dislike a coworker and they have an idea about something, and you don't agree with them and you don't like them and you don't want to listen to what they have to say, That means that you have a very narrow band when you enter into that particular moment. You are not 100% in that moment. You are 100% plus, you know, or 100% minus in that moment. So from a perspective of fully expressing the Dharma position, you would want to have 360 degrees of exit out of that moment. 360 degrees of choice of what's the most skillful response. That's freedom. And that happens right there in that 100% that moment. So you come into the moment, and if you can see what you're clinging to, if you can see what the problem is, then you can let go of that. You can say to yourself, and this is the practice, right? This is the practice that we do where we have to think about the practice, where we say, I don't like my coworker, you know, I don't want to listen to what they have to say, but actually I know that that's not very skillful. So at this moment, I'm going to try to open my mind and listen to what they have to say and really let go of my dislikes and dislikes about this person, my likes and dislikes, and I'm going to go ahead and just try to really be present for them and drop all the preconceived ideas that I have about what's going on. Then you might actually hear what they're saying, and you might agree with it or you might disagree with it, but you actually heard what it was that they said. So then your response can be, you might say, well, I disagree with you, right? But the, when I disagree with you doesn't carry, I disagree with you, but I don't like you. I disagree with you, and oh, by the way, I think your hair is ugly. Because that's what we do, you know, it's like, it's loaded with all this extra stuff up in the thing. So this is this way in which we say, you know, we can have clarity about what we're up to. So that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to have this clarity. It can only happen, that response can only happen in this moment. It can't happen in the past, and it can't happen in the future. Our practice is right here in this Dharma position. So Dogen says, we should study the occasion as well as the form of the radiance of this flower opening. So this study of the radiance is the study of our practice. This study of radiance is our study of reality itself. Using Buddhist practice, of course, because, well, this is Buddhism. So this way in which we this is our vocabulary, our language, our way of talking about the nature of reality. So when Dogen says, you know, as well as a form, studying the form, he's talking about, well, you know, study it this way. So we study the occasion, we study the form, and we study this radiance. We look for this koan of what is this radiance of the flower opening. What is this radiance of the difficulties in our life? Where is that radiance? Where does that radiance go when I want to kill someone? You know, where does that radiance go when I'm having a difficult time? Where does a difficult time go when I'm feeling very radiant? This is all, you know, part of this Dharma position. It doesn't not be there. So each Dharma position holds the totality, not as potential, but actually the totality is still interpenetrating and functioning within this particular moment. Even though we're responding to the moment as just this moment. So when we use things, you know, the bell sits here. It has its own life, its own particularity that isn't about us using it to make a tone. In this metal, all of the universe, the Big Bang, everything here, now, past, present, future, throughout unfathomable space and time, whole, you know, as a hologram, this bell presents itself. And yet simultaneously, there is this way in which I am never not with this bell. And yet there is the 100% just this moment of that intimacy in that moment of the bell and I and you hearing 100% that moment, the bell. So this is what Dharma position is about. And this is a big part of Dogen's teaching, is to understand the nature of what it is to be a Dharma position. So this flower opening is about Dharma position. He says, we should study the occasion as well as the form of the radiance of this flower opening. This flower opening is the expression. There's an opening. Opening is a way in which we talk about activity, right? This activity of the flower opening is not passive. This activity includes growing, right? It includes responding. Flowers open because the sun shines on them. Flowers open because they get the right kind of nourishment. Flowers opening symbolize for us something to do with renewal, something to do with impermanence, although we don't usually think about it that way. But a flower opening also contains a flower closing. It contains the flower's petals falling off. It contains the flower as a seed. It contains the plant when it's not flowered. So it is this active interaction of all of reality in the context of the flower opening. That's the 100% this moment Dharma position. The petals of the single flower are the five petals. So what's that about? So we can look at the flower in two different ways. We can look at the flower as, if we want to talk about this from the aspect of, we could look at the flower as a kind of universal aspect and the flowers as individual parts, right? So we could look at it that way. We could look at, say, the flower is more like the absolute and the petals are more like the relative. We could talk about it that way. Or we could just talk about it as parts and whole. Or we could talk about it as maybe that activity of the Dharma position and break it down that way. Just saying there is this Dharma position called flower. And the activity of that flower includes the petals opening. Or we can talk about the five petals opening as a way of talking about, metaphorically, about realization. This flower can be maybe Buddha nature, our inherent, innate Buddha nature, which, by the way, even though it's there, it is who we are, 100%, we still don't always respond from that place. So there's this way in which the five petals can be seen as the five aggregates. We're talking about people. So the five aggregates would be form, sensations, perceptions, formations, volition, sensations, perceptions, formations, and consciousness. So this form is the way in which something presents itself, right? This particularity, form, body. The sensations are when you're touched, you feel something. This is a way that we, in Buddhism, we break down talking about the constellation of parts of human beings, but mostly it's talking about the constellation of how our minds work, our consciousness functions. Perceptions, so that would be eyes, ears, nose. Formations are mental formations. So how we put this all together. And out of that comes our will or volition, our ideas about things. And also out of that comes our karmic clinging, right? And all this is dependent upon a kind of awareness, which is our consciousness. So that's a Buddhist way of breaking down and talking about the nature of what it is to be a human being. We could probably break it down in other ways as well. But these five petals could be referring to that. So it's this awakening of the five, of the skandhas. It's this awakening of these aggregates, the five aggregates. We should study the occasion as well as the form of the radiance of this flower opening. The petals of the single flower are the five petals. The five petals opening is the single flower. So he says, the petals of the single flower are the five petals. The five petals opening is the single flower. So if we have the single flower, and we think of that as representative of something very big, the five petals become that 100% Dharma position. And this 100% Dharma position is still the opening of the single flower. This is important because it means that if we can deeply understand the nature of one thing, we understand the nature of all things. There is a Huayan expression, to know one thing is to know all things. So when we talk about our practice fully entering into the Dharma position of 100% just this moment that we're experiencing, we're talking about asking ourselves, what is it? What is it? What's happening here? You know? And what's happening here in a way that's inclusive of the totality of what's happening here, at the same time, the particularity of what's happening here. And usually we talk about that as what's happening here, right? What's happening here with me? What am I thinking about in this moment? How am I understanding the nature of this? And can I include something bigger than that? If we talk about it from another way, from a Buddhist point of view, we might say, can we see that what this is impermanence? Like, what is impermanence? Can I see the impermanence of this moment? Can I understand and investigate the impermanence of myself? Can I investigate the... That's one of the things that we do in Zazen, right? Is we notice the impermanence of our thoughts. We notice that thoughts arise and fall and come and go. And if we sit there long enough, whatever we're thinking about or not thinking about will go away and something else will happen. That, in a way, is a great relief, right? But when we're in our everyday life and something happens and we're feeling overwhelmed by it, then at that point, that thought completely fills our mind and drives our actions. Because we forget about impermanence in that moment, because it seems very real in this moment, like nothing will ever change in this moment. So when we deeply go into investigating the nature of this particular thing, we start to see, oh, how does impermanence work? How is this in my life? Or taking something like seeing the interconnection of beings, of seeing the sameness. So when we feel very separate and we're having a conflict with somebody, it's not about us, it's all about them. Right? We're not connected to them in any way. They're not like us. They're just the bad guy. They're the deluded person. They're the ones who are evil. They're the ones who are whatever. Blame, blame, blame. It has nothing to do with me, because we're feeling very defensive in a certain way usually. But if we turn that around and start looking at that and saying, how am I connected with this person? If it is true that in this Dharma position everything is interconnected, that has to include that other person. That other person has to be part of my life. That other person as a person, like if I actually look at what it is to be a human being and I see the sameness of being a human being, I realize that, oh, I know what that feels like. I've had that emotion. I may not be framing it quite the way this person is or whatever it is, but essentially I know what it is to be frightened. I know what it is to be angry. I know what it is to be feel this feeling or that feeling. And then all of a sudden I'm freed from these blinders of my need to kind of have it my way, if you will. My need to only see it from a very narrow point of view. And suddenly I can see this person as like me. that we have a connection, that we really are interpenetrating. And, you know, this interpenetration is not just like a kind of mental exercise. We actually, when we're sitting in the same room, we exchange oxygen with each other and carbon dioxide. And on a cellular level, we are actually becoming the same. We are actually becoming each other because we never were not, you know. And at the same time, we're 100% totally who we are, personalities and all, likes and dislikes and all. But this teaching is trying to break this open, you know, this little isolation that we're engaged in. So if we understand, this is this understanding that the petals of the single flower are the five petals opening is the single flower. This way that we understand that our life and things just as they are and reality itself and this Dharma position and this moment and this person, that while we are particular, at the same time, we have these deep essential similarities. These deep essential, from a Buddhist perspective, they're not similarities, they are actually the same thing. We have this shared essence, shared essential nature. And not only do we share it with other human beings, we share it with the bell, and we share it with the zabaton, and we share it with anything else that you can name. Which, of course, then that brings up the whole business about ecology, how we use things, how we respect the things in our lives, how we take care of our environment. This brings up our bodhisattva practice of this kind of altruistic, compassionate, wise, discerning relationship with the totality of our life and the whole earth. So these activities of the five petals is the activity in the form of the whole of the flower's activity simultaneously. It is the whole of the universal activity of all of his life's activity. Or as Dogen says in the Fastful Zenki, he calls it the whole works. This is the whole works. So you can see that we are never separate from the whole works. And yet at the same time, we're just going through our day. You know, at the same time, we get on our calendars or look at our cell phones and we say, yes, I have this appointment today and I have to go to work and I've got to go buy food and da-da-da-da-da-da-da, right? All of those things that we do. But how do we do them? How do we engage in that life? The next part of this is where the truth of the single flower is penetrated. It's interesting that here the translation is where the truth of instead of when the truth of. So where the truth of the single flower is penetrated, it is I originally came to this land to transmit the Dharma and save deluded beings. You could almost think of this, if you're just reading this, like where did that come from? Where did that line come from? Hopefully you know from what I've just said where that line came from, but I'll talk about where that line came from. I like that it's interesting, and if I were going to go into this a little further, I would go back and look at some other translations instead of where the truth of the single flower is penetrated or when the truth. So we have this being time again. We have this Dharma position at the place of. So this is really important. This is not just something we just go right by. In this particular moment, in this occasion, at this time, when or where the truth of the single flower, when we understand in that moment, because it can't happen anywhere else, but now. That's why it's so important that we actually put our effort into our practice and don't delay it. So we say, the student said one time, well, I know what's right, but I don't want to do it right now. And I completely can relate to that. I know the right thing to do at this moment would be to apologize, but I don't want to do it because my ego or my sense of self or my defensiveness or the fact I don't want them to have one up on me or whatever the reason is prevents me from doing this practice. And I rationalize that as okay. So our practice in that moment is to overcome the rationalization and say, I'm sorry. Or to overcome the rationalization and say, can I help you? You know? Can I open the door for you? I know I'm in the meeting, I'm in the doctor's office and some woman has got her walker and she can barely get the door open. But I'm sorry, I'm reading an article. What if they call me? I might not get a chance to finish this sentence, so I better not help you. Right? I mean, we do this kind of stuff. So our practice in that moment is to get our little butts off the chair and open the door. That's our practice. And the more we do that, the more we continue to do that activity. We just keep, and it gets easier and easier because every time we do it, we realize that it wasn't so hard and that it wasn't a threat to our sense of self. It wasn't a threat to whatever we thought was more important in that moment. So where the truth of the single flower is penetrated, in this moment as we penetrate the truth of this teaching, it is, I originally came to this land to transmit the Dharma and save deluded beings. At the moment of the penetration is the moment of the Bodhisattva vow. And the Bodhisattva vow is, beings are numberless, I vow to save them, delusions are inexhaustible, I vow to end them, Dharma gates are boundless, I vow to enter them, Buddha's way is unsurpassable, I vow to become it. So he says, and save the deluded beings. This doesn't mean, oh, I'm so amazingly enlightened that I've just brought myself to your country for the purpose of waking all of you poor little dears up. Because all of us are deluded beings in this world being deluded together. As a matter of fact, that's just the nature of what it is to be a human being in this realm. So Bodhidharma says, I'm in it, that's the Bodhisattva vow. I'm just going to stick in here in this lifetime. And it has doctrinal ramifications, okay? So in some other schools of Buddhism, in Theravada Buddhism, and in early Buddhist teachings, the idea is that you get off the wheel of birth and death. So that means that your whole focus of your practice is that when you die, you enter into a kind of nirvana in which you are not reborn in any of the six realms. So there's no rebirth. And you do this by clearing up all of your sort of karmic residue and clinging. That's not the end game for us in Mahayana Buddhism. The end game for the Bodhisattva in Mahayana Buddhism is that you keep being reborn back into this world until no one needs to be reborn, until all suffering is eradicated. If our essential nature and essential being is this way in which we have this deep realization about impermanence, about sameness, interpenetrating and interconnecting with each other, and out of that comes a kind of discerning wisdom. And I want to say discerning because this is not a wisdom that's like anything goes, right? It's not a kind of like, as Trungpa used to say, idiot compassion, but an intelligent, sane compassion with each other, setting boundaries, doing all of that in a compassionate way. This way in which we all try to do this practice, this is saving all beings. For us, it's not about proselytizing and it's not about going out and saving all beings, whatever. That's a koan, right? What does that mean? But it means we practice with ourselves. We practice with our own suffering. And through the transformation of the self into a saner, more compassionate person, empathic person, wiser person, that affects everything else, because we are in this interpenetrating, interconnected relationship with all of reality. So it's like ripples happening out. And Buddhism, by the way, of course, doesn't have a corner on this market. All practices that are empathic and sane and all those things ripple, and thank goodness for it, right? Because we hear all the bad news. And because the good news isn't so newsy. It's just, it's just not as much fun, But we do hear about it. It's very local, right? It's all interesting, that local good news. So anyway, that's part of this aspect of saving all beings. So he says, where the truth of the single flower is penetrated, when we get this about the nature of reality, then I originally came to this land, and this I, in Chinese and in Japanese, there's personal pronouns aren't used that way. So it could be just originally came to this land. Who is this I that originally came to this land? So that, I think that's where we get caught in this translation in a way. If we think about a kind of hubris like Bodhidharma, I. And actually, the I can be we, they, all beings came to this land simultaneously. Everything is arising simultaneously in this moment. So this way of the simultaneity of the totality of all of this originally came to this land, but it did not originally come to this land because it was already pre-existing in this land, as is the Dharma and the saving of deluded beings. And yet simultaneously, there is the specificity in this story of Bodhidharma coming to China to teach Buddhism, to introduce Buddhism. So that all that simultaneously is functioning in this phrase. So we can see it from the particularity of it, and we can see it from the universality of it simultaneously arising. So this is the radiance. This is the particularity of the Buddha nature manifesting as Bodhidharma, in this case as Buddhism, in this case as the flowers and the petals, as the flower opening and the five petals. All of this happening. What is that? What is that? This is the study of the Bodhisattva path. This has to include studying the self. In the Genchō Koan, in Shobogenso, Dogen said, to learn the Buddha way is to learn oneself. To learn oneself is to forget oneself. To forget oneself is to be confirmed by all dharmas. To be confirmed by all dharmas is to cast off one's body and mind and the bodies and minds of others. To learn the Buddha way is to learn oneself. To actually understand one's true nature means that you understand the Buddha way, what we were talking about before. This nature of impermanence, this nature of connection, this nature of this dharma position containing and being and realizing and expressing the totality of all of reality in this particular moment with skillful means, in a skillful way. That's how we learn the self, the true nature of the self. But we also, the only way we learn that is because we learn about our mistakes. We learn about our suffering. We learn about all the parts that we don't like. Because that, in some ways, is our motivation. That's our classroom. That's our class. Our suffering is our classroom. If we did not suffer, we would not do the practice. Because the practice is hard. It's hard to go apologize when you don't want to apologize. It's hard to open the door or do something when you don't want to do it and you'd rather do something else. It's easy to ignore what you don't want to see. So we learn, we make mistakes, and we learn from those mistakes. We see others make mistakes, and we learn from their mistakes. And so this is another way to talk about learning from oneself. And then, so this is to learn the Buddha way is to learn oneself. To learn oneself is to forget oneself. When we actually learn our true nature, we forget our selfish self. We forget the self that is not inclusive. We forget the self that clings to the notion of being permanent. And in the, then it, that self opens up. So he's not saying that you don't have a self. He's saying you forget the selfish self. You forget the self that's unskillful. And you learn a new way of interacting, which is actually an expression of and a reflection of and an embodiment of what actually is happening. This is the true self. Then to forget oneself is to be confirmed by all dharmas. So dharmas is anything. So when we are able to interact in the simultaneity of inclusivity of everything within the context of the particular and what's appropriate for the particular, then that's a confirm. It will confirm the nature of our understanding, is what he's saying here. And then he says, to be confirmed by all dharmas is to cast off one's body and mind. And this doesn't mean that you no longer have a body and mind. It's the same thing like talking about the self. This casting off of the body and mind is this letting go of being the center of circle. Letting go of the me part. And it also says that, so you're not only seeing yourself as just this one individual body and mind, and you cast off the body and minds of others as well, because at that point you're in an interactive, intimate life with others and all being. It's no longer a life of just me. So this casting off is not like you're going to some ethereal realm that has no form. It's this way in which you are in this interactive, intimate life with all of reality. So we can and we should study who we are and how we function as a body and mind. And this study frees us from our own mental cages and from much of the suffering that's caused by physical pain, because we are in bodies. Physical pain is physical pain, and I'm not saying it's not real, but often we put something on top of that, which is our ideas about what it means or what it is, that can exacerbate our pain. So this is a very specific study that guides us towards letting go of our attachments and our own mental formations that are not helpful because they separate us from being intimate with the world's activity, which is none other than our own true nature, that world's activity. This freedom of seeing and understanding that we are not separate, although we are real in particular, is what opens up our view and gives us a larger capacity to hold our life and the life of other beings. So Caroline's going to a workshop in Chicago next week with Byron Katie, who has a really interesting thing that she does. She says she wants people to investigate the nature of truth by what they're thinking. So the four questions are, is it true? Can you absolutely know it's true? How do you react? And what happens when you believe that thought? Who would you be without that thought? Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So, is it true? Can you absolutely know it's true? How do you react? What happens when you believe that thought? Who would you be without that thought? This kind of work is really interesting because how we think about things, so this is studying the nature of the self, in a conventional way, we forget that the body and mind are not, are the same thing, right? We tend to bifurcate. We say, I have a body and I have a mind. They're not separate, by the way, but we think they're separate. And somewhere the mind, you know, we know the mind's up here in the brain, and we're like little homunculuses inside our brain, you know, going like this. Okay, turn right, turn left, you know, think this thought, do this. And the rest of this down here is doing something. And it's kind of a pain as you get older. It's sort of like, what's happening to the other part here, right? It's like, I've got aches and pains now I didn't have before. Gosh, they're actually connected. So this is very interesting because she's taken this particular very important thing about the nature of how we frame reality to ourselves, which is how we think about things, the dialogue that we have in our head. To know the self is to forget the self. To know the dialogue in your head, to actually say, what is it? This is, you know, what she's saying here is, what is it? What constitutes my notion of self? How do I look at that? And when we actually deconstruct our notion of self, it has to do with self-talk. It has to do with how we're talking to ourselves about the nature of our experience. And Caroline reminded me when she was telling me about this, when I was in San Francisco Zen Center's first starting practice, it was in my 30s, and I was listening to a talk by Reb Anderson, and he said, you know, that old trope, the thing about, you know, just because you think it doesn't mean it's true, which, like, we've all heard this our whole life, right? And I went, whoa, that's true. So I'm like, whoa, that's amazing. That's actually true. I realized that everything that kind of went through my head, I assumed was a fact. Because, well, that little guy up there, or girl, or whoever it was making this running commentary on the nature of my experience. This is this going into the 360 degrees of a Dharma position. So Byron Katie is saying, is she's saying, you know, if you really have to look at that thought process going into that 360 degrees, into the Dharma position. What are you trailing behind you? What trunk are you dragging in, you know, to this moment? That you're flipping open the top and all this stuff is coming out, this dialogue about this. And by the way, this dialogue is how we define the self. Right? That's how we define the self. We say to ourselves, I am this, I am that, he is this, she is this, this is happening, this isn't happening, I want this, I don't want this. It's like all that stuff that's going on, and we're believing it, and we're defining the nature of our reality. I'm a victim, I'm a perpetrator, I'm a this, I'm a that. And as soon as we go, I am this, I am that, this is that, we say we reify something. We concretize it. We make it real. It has no space. And so we want to open all that up. And that's such a gift that she gives people, to open up that place. Open up that 360 degrees. Go into that moment, that Dharma position, knowing that if you have that thought, it's not necessarily true. And that frees you. But it's still really hard to do because you're defining the nature of who you are through how you're talking to yourself about who you are and who other people are. You know, I'm right, I'm wrong. This person's good, this person's bad. I'm better than they are. Compare all the stuff that we do. So that is knowing the self, right? That's knowing the self. So this is the activity of dropping the self. We're not being asked to stop being a particular person. We are being asked to get out of our heads and to become free from our karmic chains and interact with the totality of our experience. When Dogen writes, where the truth of the single flower is penetrated, he is saying that if we can truly know ourselves, we can free ourselves from our isolation. We become aware of our shared essential nature and the activity of the world, and we are not obstructed from this freedom by our own thoughts, which separate us and make us fearful of others. So the last thing I wrote in my notes here is, of course, we must be careful in how we understand this teaching, because if we do not pay attention to our own minds and needs, we can reach out in a way that's not helpful, okay? So this can backfire on you if you don't understand the teaching. You know, somebody calls you up on the phone and says, hey, I can sell you the Brooklyn Bridge. And you're like going, oh, we're all in these interconnected relationships. This must be true. This person, how could they possibly be lying to me. So, you know. So this is not a teaching that is saying don't use your mind. Don't. You need to discern what is helpful or not. But to me, when we understand these teachings, it can help us direct us towards the work of freeing ourselves from this kind of imprisonment that we're caught in. So that's the opening part of Kuge, Flowers of Emptiness. Thank you.